everyone. Welcome to This Is Ro, the podcast where we share stories and perspectives on figuring out life. On this show, I'll be sitting down with my friends and chatting about how their life stories have prepared them for who they are today. So check back every Wednesday for new episodes and slide in my DMs if you have any thoughts or questions, because I'm always interested in hearing from you. On this week's two-part episode, I'll be telling you more about analog photography, my time at art school, and introducing you to Master Ro. I hope you enjoy. So when I first started this podcast, I really underestimated how difficult, challenging, how many moving parts were a part of a journey to creating a podcast, never mind launching one and then upkeeping one. I decided to call in backup. I called two friends actually, and I had asked them if they were to be able to prompt me so at least I can have a start to how to express the stories and the message that I'm intending to spread. And here's the thing. For a very long time, and it's one of the things I wish I knew a long time ago, was that my ability to overthink is what has held me back from most of the things that I have done, achieved, thought about, dreamt about in the last year. And I promised myself starting 2023 that all I will do is make decisions. Doesn't matter what decision that is, just make a decision. And one of those decisions was, I'm going to set the date to January 18th to launch a podcast. No one can prepare you for what that's going to take, what it's going to do to you, your storytelling, your kind of storytelling. Do you want to interview? Do you want to co-host? What are you going to talk about? What are you going to talk about some more? And then you have to come up with all the content. And then you just don't realize that when you come up with the content, that you can have what I call stage fright, that you can be so overwhelmed that you have this great story and then you want to record it, but then you want to record it with video. But then when you're recording it with a video and I'm reading it from somewhere, that you'll see me reading it from somewhere. And then I have to have an external camera. And it's just, the rabbit hole is big. You have to tether yourself back and say, hey, we wanted to start a podcast. All right, what's step one? And then just go from there. Then I would have to chat with coaches, friends, husband, more coaching on what is really my message. Oh my gosh, I don't remember my message. Oh no, I don't think it's going to be worth it. A lot of limiting belief, self-sabotage. All right, we get through that. Then it was, all right, let me just write the story highlights. You can look up template on how to write out a basic podcast episode. Cool. Found that too. Then it says, have key points, have data, have supporting data. Oh my God, I need to have data. Like, that's what we're doing. Ugh. And it just goes on and on. All that to say, the reason why I'm sharing that story is because this following episode is about analog photography and introducing you to Master Ro. A part of me thought, let's not add this recording into it because it's a little bit messy. Recording an episode with my best friend on FaceTime, and you can hear her through it, and she's prompting me. She has really good reflective points throughout our session, and this is almost a two-hour call. I thought, that sounds really messy, so I don't want to put that in the podcast. However, process is process. We love to see the process of how a building is built, how paintings are being painted, how sculptures end up in public spaces. And for anyone out there who knows, you're it when you create a podcast in the beginning. Like, I don't have any money. I'm not getting funded or anything for this episode. You're the content creator, you're the technician, you're the engineer, you're the marketing, branding, you're the salesperson, you're the social media manager, like, you're everything. And that's really overwhelming. I wanted to show that I could do it, that you do it alone. And I've always, always believed in the premise of ask for help, work with the team. There's no reason to do things alone when you can do them together, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked a lot about
Sure. Where should I start? Should I start when I came back?
Yeah, what was that like?
So the summer, in the summer is my birthday. So I turned 18 and just moved to Holland. So it was like a big birthday. Culturally, it's a big birthday because in Holland, you're seen as like an adult. So you could do whatever you want. But I came from such a, what felt like a very small world that I was in like in complete shock, never mind culture shock, which is ironic considering you're Dutch, but then you've never really like, you weren't raised in the culture and you were only there on vacation. So you don't, you know, I don't know what it was like to be Dutch in Holland. So coming back was really hard. For the first time in a long time, I had no friends. And it's summer and you want to be outside. So like my friends were my parents. It's the part of transition I feel like we don't talk about enough. But I still very much felt like a kid. So it was very lonely. And it was very confusing. And I ended up getting two jobs. So I decided to have work to meet people. I also had work so I could learn to speak Dutch again because I didn't speak Dutch anymore. Like I could understand everything, but I didn't speak it. It took me about a year to accept that my life in Asia was over. What I didn't know then was that I was grieving that my life in Asia was over and that it would, in theory, just never come back. Because my parents said, we don't want to be living abroad anymore. You know, dad doesn't want to be traveling for work anymore. So most likely, like, this is it. And I didn't realize that how big of an impact that would have been. So like, yes, a part of me was a little bit naive. I was just like, whatever. But a part of my personality is also like, I'll just go and I'll deal with whatever comes up when it comes up, right? So after about a year, I decided to apply for art school. It was the only thing I did back in the Philippines in high school that really brought me some form of like joy. It was a way to kind of like process emotions. So I figured why not give that a try? That's how I ended up doing an entrance exam for art school. However, the art school that accepted me was on the other side of the country. So after a year of transitioning into Holland, living in the household with my parents, I had to, like any other student, go and live, you know, on campus because of how many times I moved and how many times I had to say bye to my friends and like have my foundation be kind of be disrupted. That moving to college was way harder than moving back to Holland somehow. I was really seeking a place where I could just feel accepted the way UWC did in Singapore. And I was really hopeful that art school was going to go do that for me because it's art and like it's feelings in all different shapes and forms. And I thought that was really what it was going to be. And sadly, it just wasn't. The school wasn't in like, you know, Amsterdam or Rotterdam, like one of these more international places. I happened to be, again, one of three foreigners. So when I got accepted into the first international class, which meant that all the teachings would be done in English. We didn't know that it wasn't for 4 years, like for your entire bachelor's degree. They just offered it so that the government could like say like, okay, cool. So like you're offering like an international program. So if you're expressing your art and your feelings in English to then have to go to Dutch, that really affects how you communicate, essentially, is what I'm saying. Before they found out I spoke Dutch, they thought I was an American. And most people don't like Americans in that school. So they didn't want to talk to me. I would have to prove by speaking Dutch that I wasn't an American. And then they said, okay, then it's okay, because then I don't mind getting to know you. Because of doing that, I had to prove that I was Dutch. Then other people found out I was Dutch. And then the teacher stopped speaking to me in English, but then made fun of me or tried to disrespect me by saying, well, why can't you just say that in Dutch? I thought you were Dutch. That was my first year of art school. and my rude awakening that I was not in a place where freedom of expression mattered over where my race or like background was from. I'm surprised I even stayed, truthfully. I stayed because I was scared that if this wasn't it, then I didn't know what was going to be. I also was undiagnosed depressed at the time, because this diagnosis only came probably like 5-6 years later. But I like barely made it, because you have to make all your classes in order to go to your second year. And second year is specialty. So I thought if I could make it into my second year, I can major. And hopefully I can major into the medium that I want to be in, which initially was film. And then I realized I would have to be behind a computer. So then I chose photography. And photography really opened up a whole entire world to how I process my entire life and lived experiences and being diverse and intersectionality by storytelling. And I think that photography was really what was like one of the things that I struggled a lot with, was coming to terms with the fact that my life in Asia was over and that I didn't koester. I took for granted every moment that I had, that everything now is just a memory. So I thought, well, what is the one medium that keeps a memory alive that works for me is photography, because you document time in the most literal sense. Another thing that I didn't know until much, much later, which was only a year ago, that I'm neurodivergent. So by having ADHD, it's very common to have very poor memory. So I thought I had early signs of Alzheimer's. For some reason, I thought that would be like a very okay diagnosis for myself. So I was like, oh my God, if I'm going to lose my memory, I have to take pictures. So really, yeah. Photography in my, you know, early 20s, like really saved my life. None of the teachers really wanted me to be there. Even like first day I showed up in the new year, I walked up to photography and one of the teachers looked at me and he goes, what are you doing here? I was like, oh, I specialize in photography. And he's like, really? And I feel like when that tone was set, and it goes back to the story that I told when I was little, as much as I know that you don't think that I belong there, somehow I believe that I did. Even though I didn't have much confidence to go off of or skill or anything, because I was there to learn it, I didn't feel like as if I would have to like go back to the principal and say, like, I think I made a mistake. I should go to another department. We're right. In class one day and you have two evaluations that come up. I knew that time was coming and like it was like in a month type of shit. And I was like, oh, my God, like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know I want to be here. I find out that we have a whole line of photographers in my family. I've known of it, but I never made the exact link. So I was like, okay, so I must have photography in my blood. I can do this. And so I decided to go to the Philippines after 2 years. And I thought, I have to show these people like where I'm from and where I lived. And what better way to do that than come back with like a real like body, like a story in imagery. So I went to the Philippines. I had like a 35 millimeter camera. I didn't really know what I was doing. I think I had like 10 black and white film that I could afford. Coming home with such an intense body of work that most people didn't travel the lengths for to get. That was the beginning of the style in photography, if you will, that I decided to pursue. It was like a in between of kind of like documentation and like street photography. The ironic part about that was it wasn't received the way I thought it would have. Where it was like, oh, interesting. Like she traveled all the way to this other country. Like she came back with, you know, really amazing photographs of these people. And it was, I don't know, it was like very much dismissed almost. I think I made the connection that like, if I do what they want and they don't accept me, and I do what I want and they don't accept me, then it either way, it doesn't matter because they don't accept me. So might as well just do whatever it is that I want to be doing. It's only that I tell you the story that I realize that that's what happened. I don't know how I managed to just like put it somewhere in my memory. I also decided to do a minor in my third year of investigating photography styles of my ancestors. And when I say ancestors, they photographed when photos were still developed on glass plates. This was a time where through imagery and art, I was finally making like a reconnection to my heritage, but then through imagery, which I thought was really cool. I made a whole book and I made a whole presentation about how the styles of photography and how imagery that they actually very much contributed to documenting time in history. And that pushed me to my final year in school. And the final year, for anyone who goes to art school, it's like, it's very stressful because really you want like another 2 years because it's a lot of fun. But it also kind of comes down to the work that you produce, the work that you've produced throughout the years. Are you going to be picked up for a gallery? Are you going to be picked up, you know, for any type of recognition? It pushed me to go back to Singapore for the first time since I'd left. And when I went back, it's like traveling with a mirror. Everything that you don't want to confront because it's painful, anything that was a really amazing memory, that is painful because it's like it's no longer there. Like every single one of those emotions came up during that trip. Every single picture I took, I felt was shit. I thought that everything I was doing, nobody was going to care about. It was useless. It was just an emotional trip. I will fail. Like all the self-sabotage, self-limiting beliefs that I had during that trip. And I remember I came home, I developed everything, and I sat down with my teacher and I just sat there and he looked at the photos and he was like, oh my God, this is amazing. He's like, this is so good. Like I also last minute decided to experiment with color. So he was like, I love that you're doing like color and black and white. And I would travel with four different types of cameras. And I just sat there and I cried. And I told him, I was like, I think I just entirely failed myself and my art school career. And he asked me why I thought that. I don't know. I said, I've been trying really hard to express who I am in the most artistic form. And I feel like just no one gets it. So that means that I'm not good at what I do, right? If no one gets it. And he was like, but what do you mean? He's like, you've taken your entire like art career, the 4 years that you've been here. And by the time you're graduating, you have a full body of work you've been working on for 4 years. He's like, that's actually the entire fucking point of what people do in art school. It's just because the majority of people don't do it because they don't get there and therefore don't present it that way. Doesn't mean that that wasn't the purpose of art school. And I think what I was going for was I just wanted to have like validation of people understanding that this is who I am. I didn't accept who I was. So I was looking for external validation through my work to say, oh my God, like I get it. I don't actually remember who it was. Someone told me that the reason why people don't get it is because they are not your audience. That they themselves were born and raised in one place. That they don't understand that like your worlds really looked, you know, like Little India and Chinatown in Singapore is like one thing, like one lived experience. You add all the crazy different situations and Dutch school and UWC and United Nations Night and going to the Philippines, like all of those are all your lived experiences. That's way more potent and like culturally influenced than anyone at the school. And someone was like, you literally did what we want students to do. You're just the only one that got it. And I said, well, who's to say? And then like I sabotaged more. I said, but who's to say I could do this type of style, this good of imagery in a country I've never lived in? And she laughed. It was a teacher. She laughed. She was like, you're silly. She goes, it's going to be fantastic because you're a great photographer and you have great imagery. Photography in that sense was like my way of processing transition, life shifts, cultural changes, the intersectionality that comes up a lot more often than not. And I'm super grateful and super fortunate that I have like an artistic way to do that. to express that and to process it. I'll be ending the podcast episode here only because there's so much more left to say and there is a part two. And I don't want to make it too long-winded. For now, if you like what you hear so far, please subscribe, rate, and review. That will help This Is Row podcast so much. I would love to hear your thoughts, comments. Please leave them for me to read. I'll be so excited to get to know what it is that resonated for you. Until next time, this is Row. I'll see you later.